Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Great show for you again this week. I caught up with Ken and spoke to him about the Welsh Open. I had a wonderful chat with Olivia O'Toole about her wonderful career and 130 caps for Ireland. I spoke to Will Slattery about all things rugby. And Declan Drake gives you all the latest in GAA. And Alan Cawley looks back on an interesting weekend's results in the SSE Airtricity League. Download the show now wherever you get your podcasts. Ken, it's lovely here. How are
morning.
You where
you are? Yeah, it's lovely over here, Reg. Lovely sunny morning, although it's been raining all week, but today is beautiful, thankfully. Nice to see a bit of sun here in sunny Wales.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't get to say that often about Wales, to be fair.
No. It's been quite miserable. It's been raining since we got here, but today is the sun has come out, so the weekend is here, and it's lovely. Yeah, well, all looking forward to the weekend, yeah.
Absolutely. What a place to be in Wales in the lashing of rain. Many dreary nights spent looking out the window in Swansea and Cardiff and Tennetly and these places. And Newport.
Yeah.
I tell you what.
Newport, that's where we are. That's where we are.
Yeah, Newport. Well. You want to make sure your mental health is in good order in Newport on a wet day, that's for sure. Kebab shops.
Oh, yeah.
That's
kebab shops, yeah. And bookies.
I know. We love Wales. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
How was your week? Is it good?
It's been a good week, yeah. It's down to semi-finals today.
Yeah.
And Trump is playing Hussein Bafai from Iran, and Joe Perry is playing Jack Lazowski in the other semi-final, you know?
Yeah.
Neil Robertson was beat last night. A very emotional Neil Robertson, actually, because of the sad news of poor Shane Warne, you know, the cricketer. Of course, Neil Robertson is Australian, and he lost last night, but he said he couldn't play. He said he was very emotional over. Actually, he was almost in tears, you know, in his after-match press conference, you know, because of the very sad and sudden death of Shane Warne. You know, he was a great sort of gregarious character, and died. He only 52. Died in Thailand for a sudden heart attack. I think, you know.
Yeah, I know. It was shocking news yesterday.
Mm.
I believe it myself when I heard it. Warney, as he was known in sporting world. Like, I mean, he was kind of. I'm not a big cricket fan, but I know he was. He would be one of the standout names that everybody like. I mean, he had time on BBC and Question of Sport and all that. So he was well known this side of the world as well. And of course, married to Liz Hurley for a while as well. But it was a real shock.
When
he died, out of the blue. And
His good pal, the wicketkeeper Rodney Marsh, only died a couple of days beforehand.
Yeah.
And he was tweeting about it and saying how sad he was, and then all of a sudden, massive heart attack. But anyway, so it was very emotional. Neil Robertson yesterday at the press conference, and it was quite sad, really, you know. But Judd Trump he got through, and he's in the semi-finals today. So it's been a good week. We're here in the Celtic Manor, right beside where the 2010 Ryder Cup course is.
You started off the conversation painting a picture of being stuck in Newport, and then you're actually in the Celtic Manor, one of the nicest places there is in Wales. So, like, all my sympathy's gone for you straight away. And no doubt
that's where the venue is, but I didn't say I was there staying in the hotel there. We're in the Holiday Inn across the road.
Did you bring the clubs?
No, I didn't.
Don't believe it.
Yeah, but I stayed in this hotel, would you believe, 30 years ago, Reg, when I won my first ranking tournament, and I'm staying in the very same hotel, and it's still here. And I tell you what, the rooms haven't changed in 30 years.
Well, they'll finally get you for that minibar bill you left behind all that. So what's the snooker shaping up like? Who's doing
it's been really good. Judd Trump is in the semi-final. Jack Lazowski's in the other semi. And Joe Perry plays Jack Lazowski. And Trump plays Hussein Bafai from Iran, who actually used to reside in Navan for quite a while. So he's been doing really well. He won the shootout, if you remember, only a couple of months ago, which was great, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Yeah. So it should be good. It should be really, really good. You know, it was John Virgo's birthday yesterday, so we were out having a little meal with John. He's 76, would you believe?
Wow, who wouldn't?
Yeah, and it was the same birthday as the great Willie Thorne, who passed away a few years ago as well. You know what I mean? So Virgo, he's just a legend. I was in the commentary box with him yesterday. He's just still a legend. You know, he's the voice of snooker, and it's great to see him still enjoying it and still being able to commentate. And it might be actually his last year this year, the World Championships. I'm hoping not, you know, because he's been a really good pal to me over the years and still great to work with, you know.
Absolutely. So you're not playing golf. Have you had any chance to watch any of it? I see at Bay Hill, Rory's just slipped off the lead. Hovland has taken slightly over.
Yeah, I love Rory. I mean, Rory is such a talented player, isn't it? It's about time he started winning some of these events. And he started off, didn't he, really well. Was it 65 he shot in the first round?
Yeah.
So he's a two off the lead, but it's looks a great course as well, doesn't it?
Amazing, yeah. No, I think he's 65 and not quite as good. He's only two off, but I mean, I think that's plenty heading in, you know, so...
Yeah. How's your golf?
I didn't play this week, no. I had a week off. I'll be back out next Friday with the gang playing a bit. I actually was at a function last night. I'm a little bit hoarse because I was emceeing a gig for my old school last night. We had 100
Oh, very good.
100-year, not 100-year reunion, I'm not quite that old yet, but we had 100-year centenary dinner for the rugby in the school, and we had a brilliant night in the rugby club, over 200 ex-pupils. Lads I hadn't seen for 20, 30 years, Ken, were rolling up.
Oh,
I mean, rolling up. There was lads literally rolling up. There was all sorts of shapes and sizes coming from all over the place. But we had a great old night. I didn't get home till 3 o'clock, but I was very well behaved now, I must admit, because I knew I was here this morning.
Well done.
Nice to
catch up.
I'll tell you, there's no one listening to me this morning. I can promise you that much. There's none of those lads going to be up listening to me. Come here, what's happening in United? You might be getting a manager this week. Is there any chance we'll get some announcement?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I don't think Ralph is the man for the job. That's for sure. And anyway, I think it'd be great if they got. I know he's been doing all right, but I just don't think he has the personality for such a big club. I'd like to see someone like it, maybe a Pochettino or someone of that ilk, you know, maybe even, I don't know who else who could possibly sort of fill that gap, but Pochettino may be the only one, I think, you know.
Yeah, I know.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I just don't know. Pochettino's been linked, and then there's this Erik ten Hag as well being linked.
Ten Hag from Ajax.
Yeah, I mean, that might be something, you know, we know where we are with Pochettino, don't we? And I don't think anybody's kind of... Like, while there's excitement around that and interest around that, I'm not sure everybody's convinced either that he's the right person maybe to get the job done.
Yeah.
So maybe someone Ten Hag might be something totally different and something that might be needed.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. You know, but the way Ajax play football, you know, it's the Cruyff way, isn't it? You know, and he's produced a lot of great footballers from that side with very little money. So, yeah, he's a possibility as well. I just think Pochettino, I wouldn't say pedigree, but, you know, he did well with Spurs, you know, in the Champions League and that, although didn't do that great in the league. It's the Premiership. He hasn't done exceptionally well with PSG, you know.
Yeah,
but I think he might have the personality. You know, I think that's what you need. You need a big personality, and I think it'd be a no mess sort of personality with him, and he might be the man for the job. But the derby, of course, is this weekend, and I'm not looking forward to it in a way. I'm looking forward to it in one way, but in other ways, I'm certainly not. You know.
But do you not think maybe City have been showing some frailties of late? I mean, I know they're still 6 points clear, but they've shown a couple of weaknesses and they've kind of been leaving it late in games and, you know,
going
away to
maybe they're a little bit, they're a little bit vulnerable, you know, and, you know, I think we beat them last year as well, but the way they played against Old Trafford, they beat us 2-0 and they absolutely battered us, you know what I mean? It was like, he couldn't get the ball off them, you know, and I think it might be another, particularly away from home, it could be a very sort of embarrassing day for United. I hope not.
Yeah.
But I just the way they've been playing, particularly against Watford as well, it was shocking. Like, you know, they're just not scoring enough goals. You know, that's the problem.
My next guest has won 130 caps and scored 54 international goals and was just recently inducted to the Hall of Fame at the Her Sports Awards. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Olivia O'Toole. Good morning, Olivia. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. Good morning.
Yeah, great to chat to you. You've had a very outstanding career. That's the only way to describe it. But even with that, you were probably still a little bit shocked or delighted with the award recently that you got.
Yeah, I was actually fairly surprised. I wasn't expecting it because it was a Horse Sport just asked me to come on the night to present the Athlete of the Award, of the Year Award, so I wasn't expecting anything. But when I went in and seeing half of my team and half of my family there, I knew there was something going on. It was a big secret. Yeah, but it was an absolute pleasure, like, and pleasure.
Yeah, listen, well, it was undoubtedly deserved. There's no question whatsoever about it. But, you know, when you look back at your career, and obviously I've looked at details of it before we had this chat, and 130 caps. I mean, it's an incredible record. When you started out all those years ago and you were playing with boys' teams, as you had to back then, for a lot of your early playing days as a younger girl, it must have been furthest thing from your mind that you'd actually get to that level.
Absolutely. I didn't think in my wildest dreams I was going to be captain, like, on the Irish team for nearly 18, 19 years, and to go 130 caps and 54 goals, never my wildest dreams. But as a young child growing up in Sheriff Street, playing on the street when I was 6 years of age, I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be the George Best. I wanted to be the Brian Robson. You know, like, unfortunately at the time there was no girls' teams then, but yeah. I didn't care. I still played street football, do you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I've often heard Damien Duff and Robbie Keane and various other players talking about that street football mentality and how much that helps. And that's kind of lost a little bit now in the skills of the young kids growing up. And they actually feel that it's noticeable when it comes to players making the breakthrough.
Yeah, because, Reggie, when you think about it, there's no street footballs at the moment. When you go into any housing estate now, I don't think you're even allowed to play football, you know? So when we were growing up, we were playing paths, we were playing against each other, jumpers for goals on the ground, you know? So yeah. It was street football that you don't see these days. You don't see kids playing the street football. And as you said, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, the likes of Pele, the likes of Maradona, they were all street footballers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so.
And tell me, Olivia, you know, as well as the street football side of things, as you said yourself, there was no girls' teams. I mean, you and I are the same age. I'm a year older than you. So, like, I can completely relate. It's the same in rugby. There was no girls' rugby teams. There was no women's rugby teams as such. They were there, but they were never seen. So it must have been even more difficult with the lack of visibility that there was then, and you know, you had to plough in with the boys and like it or leave it. It must have been so much more difficult back then.
Yeah, it was difficult for the simple reason is, as you said, there was no girls' teams at all. So when I was playing for with Sheriff YC from the age of 8 up to 16, when I went looking for a girls' team, I couldn't find them. And when I actually found the girls' teams, they were all senior women. I was only 16 and I was playing for Drumcondra Ladies. And I was shocked that there was actually a girls' team out there.
Yeah.
And they were my first girls' team to play on. And as I said, they were all senior women. There was no one their age at the time. But, like, the boys' team, I think me playing with the boys growing up, I think it defines me. You know, like, growing up, you're a bit tougher playing with the boys, where the girls was a bit girly, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, the likes of, I used to play with the likes of Trevor Malloy and people that played, like, Trevor played for Ireland as well, and I used to play with Trevor on the street.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason, the only way I think that I prolonged my career, because there was a passion there from playing from a young age.
It must do your heart good, though, to see it kind of come around to where we're at today. I mean, you still see boys and girls playing together up to a certain age group, because I see with my own lads out in Greystones United, there's girls and boys playing together, which I think is great up to a certain point.
Maybe absolutely.
Changes. But for the girls today, though, there's so much more opportunity and there's so many teams and clubs that they can play with now. And as you said, like visibility, you can see women's football on the television.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me now is, as you said, the girls is playing with the boys, but they're playing with them at the young age of 6 and 7 and 8 and growing up. And in the parks, you can see the girls playing where years ago there was no girls playing whatsoever. And the visibility, as you said, with social media, with the Ireland ladies team now at the moment, it's thriving at the moment. Like, yeah, there was 56,000 registered football girls in Ireland last year.
Fantastic.
So that'll tell you how much the visibility with the social media and being on the telly and the likes of Kate McKay speaking out and the girls, they want to play, yeah, which is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I know, as well as, you know, that type of visibility, you're very close to Sheriff Street. You always talk about it and where you grew up and where you learned your street football. Do you think, and it's right down the road here from us in studio, so I know it well myself, and I remember, yeah, Sheriff Street in the times that we're talking about. And there's no doubt, from the outside, to most people, it was probably a tough place to grow up. You know, you'd have this idea of it or a conception of what it must have been like, but what was it really like in there, like for you, amongst the community?
Well, amongst the community is absolutely brilliant, Reggie. It's just what goes on around. As you know, in the 80s, the heroin epidemic came into Ireland and it hit Sheriff Street very bad, and my output from getting away from that was football.
Yeah.
It was the only thing I had to get away from it. But you have to understand the amount of people that's in Cherry Street. They're great people. It's just what happens around it. And as I said, like, my friends went drinking the weekend, but I didn't. I went playing football because I had a passion for football.
Yeah.
You know, so it's up to yourself to, if you have the will to do it and have the will to say to your friends, no, I'm not going drinking this weekend. I want to play football. And I think that defined me in a lot of where I am today.
Yeah. And, well, you know, in that same sense, you said there, you know, you went playing football, but your own sister Julie has written a book about heroin and her own problems with it. Where was the difference? There's two sisters. How come one go down one path and one go down the other so easy?
Well, you see, that's I was talking about just there. It's called willpower. Like, I mean, you have to say to you, because as you know, you get under pressure from your friends. You want to, come on, are you doing this weekend?
Yeah.
As like you were talking about my sister, Julie, she's 2 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And Julie had if she had stuck to it, she'd have probably made it as a footballer. I don't think for Ireland, but she played for Raphernham Ladies for years.
Yeah.
You know, so, but she just got on the wrong boat, as they say.
Mm.
And I went to the left, to the right boat, and she went to the right. You know what I mean? It's a path that you take.
Yeah.
And but so, please God, now everything's all good, like, you know, so.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it. She managed to overcome that too, and that takes willpower as well, you know, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, so fair play for that. Tell me, your international career, it was littered with games, so many of them and great ones, I'm sure, but there must be one or two that stand out in your memory.
Well, the one that obviously that stands out, Reggie, is me debut for Ireland against Spain in Seville.
Yeah.
I remember walking into the stadium and 7,000 people standing there and one little Irish flag in the crowd. And but I'll never forget standing for my national anthem and the goosebumps I got, because that was the first time I ever actually listened properly to my national anthem.
Yeah.
And during the game, as you know, in the 85th minute, I scored a winner and I got a dead leg when I took the shot. So I couldn't actually celebrate, and the girls was all around me. But after the game, the significance of the win, because Ireland ladies had never won a European Championship away, like, never. Yeah.
Amazing.
And that was like, it started to sink in then, that what I was at there doing, you know.
It's incredible. And yeah, it must have felt, Seville of all places, it must have felt brilliant, and a long way from Sheriff Street.
Absolutely.
And tell me, are you still, I know you were for a long time, are you still involved in coaching and in the community coaching down in Sheriff?
I coach Usher Celtic Ladies at the moment with my coach, Suzanne Thomas. We started it up last year, like, and it was, as you know, with the COVID and all, it was all broke up. But we're back together this year, and we've 23 players, and we're ready to go to get the season going. But this was girls coming to me from North. The girls that's on the team is both North and South side, so it's mixed. And these girls came to me because they didn't know what to do during the COVID. As you know, everything was closed up, gyms, swimming pools. And we just picked her up of a Saturday morning to get the girls out, just for the mental health as well, you know. Yeah. And it just kicked off from there, Reg. You know, we have 23 girls signed for us now for this season to start the match.
Fantastic. Well, that's great.
You know,
well, that's what you want. And as you said,
absolutely.
You know, those types of choices, Olivia, are the types of things that keep kids, and sport is so wonderful for that, for keeping them from making wrong choices. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this morning. I really enjoyed it. Congratulations on your award. It's well deserved. Hall of Famer. Like I said, you probably didn't think that would be, you know, on your CV as well as everything else that's there. So
No. After retired and after 10 years, I didn't think I was going to get that.
You think they forget about us, Olivia, but they don't really.
I know. It's all good.
Time to turn our attention to the SSE Airtricity now. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al. How are you?
I'm good, Reg. How are you?
I'm very well, very well. Beautiful day out there. Looking forward to another weekend of sport as always. But some interesting results last night, to say the least. I suppose we'll start with the Derry result, away to Shelburne, 1-0 victory. Big result for them, and important as well to put them up to the top of the table.
Yeah, big win for them, Reggie, especially coming off the back of obviously them beating Shamrock Rovers last Friday, which was a huge result, and you want to capitalise on that. They drew with Sligo Rovers on Monday, but then, as you said, they were on the road to Talca Park last night and came away with the 3 points. By all accounts, it wasn't the best game in the world, but they're the ones that if you are going to be winning silverware at the end of the season, turning a point into 3 points like that with a scrappy goal late on is always good for confidence and good for morale. So I think it was a huge result for them. It'll be a difficult place to go, Talca Park, for many teams this year. So for Derry to come away with the 3 points, it's massive. And Patrick McElhinney back on the score sheet as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Damien Duff, be disappointed, I suppose. He lost the likes of Moylan missing as well with injury, so there'll be excuses. But at the same time, losses at home like this, they won't go down well.
Yeah, Moylan is a big loss because I think everyone saw on the first night against St. Pat's just how dangerous he can be. He's an attacking, exciting young player. So just a question for Shelburne, where the goal's going to come from, Reggie. And I looked at the squad at the start of the season as well. I think the best thing for Shelburne this year is just to stabilise themselves in the Premier Division. I never expected them to do anything really, especially when I looked at the squad. And I'm not sure about the recruitment in the off-season as well, because you look at that squad, there was no real marquee signings. Now, not that I was expecting a big marquee signing, but you look at the players that they did sign, and they're just ordinary League of Ireland players, to be honest with you, Reggie. So I think it'll be a difficult enough season for them, but once they just stabilise themselves in the league, that's all they need to do, really, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the other big game, of course, of the night was the Pats Rovers game, and the result going the way of Pats, and already things slipping just a little bit for Rovers.
Yeah, I was in Inchicore. Brilliant atmosphere, Reggie. I think there was over 5,000. It was a brilliant crowd, great atmosphere, and a great game as well. A really good game, both teams. Shamrock Rovers were probably the better team in the first half, controlled the game without creating any clear-cut chances, but they were certainly in control. Ronan Finn had probably the best chance in the first half, and the goalkeeper, Anang, pulled off a really good save. In the second half, though, to be fair to Pats, they were kind of much more on the front foot, had a goal. And Forrester was outstanding in the second half. He was absolutely brilliant. And I would say they probably edged it overall. He got a great goal with his head. You wouldn't really kind of associate him with goals from corners with his head. But he was absolutely brilliant on the night. And there was another lad in midfield who was on loan from Preston, Adam O'Reilly. He was outstanding also. So it was a great result for Pats, because they had lost two games, Reggie, obviously last Friday and again on Monday. So they needed to bounce back. And that was a huge one, beating Shamrock Rovers. But from Shamrock Rovers' point of view, I'm sure Stephen Bradley would be disappointed. That's the two title contenders that we all were tipping to challenge them this year have beaten them now. That was Derry last Friday and Pats last night. And all is not well, I don't think, in the camp in terms of him trying to find the balance amongst some of his star players, because there's big egos in that dressing room. Richie Towell didn't play last night, didn't even come on. Burke was left out again, but came on and made a real difference. Danny Mandrew was taken off again. I think it's the third game in a row. And he was bitterly disappointed. He had words on the bench as well. So certainly all is not well in the camp. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for Stephen Bradley, as we said at the start. It's okay having a good and big squad that he has. It's managing these egos and trying to fit them all in. And at the moment, he's not been able to do that. And they've lost two out of their first four games.
Not a great start. No
doubt. It's good for the league, though. It's good for the league, Reggie, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great for the league. And I suppose the other team then, Drogheda, who were struggling, it has to be said, two losses. But they got their, they broke the duck last night, 4-2 win over UCD. But it has to be said, UCD are probably one of the weakest sides in the league.
Yeah, there will be, yeah. And then that was indicative of that result, because Drogheda, as you said, had lost their first two games. So there was a bit of pressure on Drogheda, because they know that the games against the likes of UCD, Finn Harp, Shelburne, they're the ones that are going to kind of define their season. So it was a massive result for them to get up and run and score four goals as well. I think, to be fair to Drogheda, they had a couple of players back that were missing in the early part of the season, the first two games. So I think they'll be a bit stronger now that they've those players back. But it was a good result. But I think UCD will find it very, very difficult throughout the season. They'll be good to watch, as I said to you, Reggie, but they concede goals at will. And that was another four they conceded last night. So it was a disappointing night for them. But good night for Kevin Doherty and Drogheda.
Yeah, finally then, Bowes. I think they'll look at this as a slip-up, one all away to Finn Harps, but definitely one that probably got away on them.
Yeah, these are the inconsistencies that can frustrate you about Bohemians, especially their supporters, I'm sure, Reggie. Because I was in Dalymount on Monday night against Pats, and they played really, really well, created a load of chances. They got the win, and you're thinking there's loads to build on here. So you're hoping to go up to Finn Harps and capitalise on that and pick up the 3 points. They went 1-0 up as well, and then it's about just managing the game. Ballybuffet is a difficult place to go, as we all know, but if you get yourself in front, it's about game management and just seeing out the game and coming away with your 3 points and get out down the road. It doesn't really matter about performances at that stage. But for them to concede again, and it's just one of those frustrating performances that you're ahead, you're thinking we'll get the 3 points from a difficult venue, and you come away with just a point. And they're the inconsistencies that will cost them across the season, because they certainly have the ability to have a team again on paper that looks like they could do something potentially, but they just have to cut out those silly mistakes and errors that make them kind of go from a 3 points back to just a 1 point.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and just finally, I suppose, we'll just have a quick chat across the water. The situation at Chelsea is a strange one, isn't it? The club up for sale, no one really knowing what's going on. Pretty uncertain times for Chelsea.
Yeah, it is, yeah, because everybody said Abramovich was a game changer for them when he came in, and we all know the money he spent, and there, I suppose people are wondering, will it be a game changer with a negative effect if he leaves? But I'm sure some other billionaire will take over. But we all know the reasons in terms of why he's getting out, Reggie. So it's not good from that point of view. And good riddance, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's probably too much money dictating terms over in that Premier League. And we're seeing it with Newcastle and all the other teams in there. So this is what happens. This is what happens when you lose.
Yeah, and I think that could be the positive that maybe comes out of such a horrible, nasty situation, is that maybe questions now are being asked, because the fit and proper rule that's there in the Premier League for people taking over football clubs, like, it's gone too far now, Reggie. Like, it's ridiculous what's going on and the money that's involved. And football has sold out, you know. It's lost everything, its integrity and everything that they've none whatsoever. And football, and that's why maybe we're seeing an increase in crowds here. Like, it was 5,500 last night. People are disillusioned with the game in England and fed up and the money and everything else, because how much lower can it go, like, you know? So, yeah, it's a horrible, nasty situation, and good riddance to the likes of Adam Abramovich and anyone else who's involved, you know.
Time to turn our attention to rugby now. Delighted to be joined on the line again after a short break by the one and only Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie. How are you?
I'm great. Good to have you back. Hope you've been enjoying the rugby. It's been an interesting few weeks, there's no doubt about it, since we last spoke to you. I'd like to start, if I may, by talking to you about the report that came out, or sort of didn't come out in some ways, into the women's game, despite the fact that we were told there would be full findings published. There's a little bit of a holdback on some of it. But the IRFU essentially have apologised to the women's team in the report, but not published it. Can you give us a little bit more info into it?
Yeah, sure. So as you mentioned there, originally it's kind of, they've done a U-turn on a U-turn, because originally they said they weren't going to publish it, and then, you know, understandably a lot of people were kind of crying out for a bit more transparency to see exactly what would be in the report. Then the IRFU said they would publish it in full, but then yesterday when they unveiled the 30 recommendations made by the report, new CEO Kevin Potts said that because of confidentiality reasons and legal reasons, you know, he kind of, not exactly 100% clear, but that they couldn't publish the report in full. Instead, they published the 30 recommendations. So that's where we're at the moment. So we know what, I suppose, the action points are now going to be, but we don't know exactly what was said by the various stakeholders, which I suppose isn't wholly satisfactory, but, you know, it is what it is. At least we get a bit more clarity around what may come out of it.
Yeah, and Anthony, Eddie sort of jumped before the report came out, so presumably he got to see it first.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you kind of, the writing was on the wall, I suppose, when it was announced earlier in the week that he was moving on. And I think there was a recognition there also that, like, his job was overseeing women's rugby sevens and 15s, and then also the men's seven program. Those roles have now been split up into, you know, a few different positions, which I think always made more sense. Like, having one person overseeing such a vast kind of, you know, portfolio across both men and women's, but then also within the 15 sevens game, I always seemed like way too much for one person. So that's one thing that's changed. And then I think, interestingly, and I've seen a couple of people make the point that if you look through the 30 recommendations, they're all really basic. Like, there's nothing like reinventing the wheel there. It's all about, like, you know, getting full-time sports psychologists, full-time, you know, athletic trainers and therapists for the team. Like, a lot of it would strike, I think, most rugby fans as things that they probably thought were there already, which shows, I suppose, just how far away maybe the women's team were from what we might come to expect in this day and age. Now, I know they're not fully professional, but for the national team, I think most people would have just presumed, and rightly so, that some of these things were already in place. So I suppose they're finally catching up to maybe what a lot of the men's teams would have had for a long time. But I think I'd encourage people, you know, it's circulating online, just look through those recommendations, because you will be maybe a bit surprised at how kind of standard a lot of them would seem to you.
It is standard, and it's quite, I'm not going to say shocking, because it's probably should have been fairly evident to anyone with half a brain that those things weren't in place. So, you know, that's what you were expecting to see. But the spend is going to be an extra million, bringing it to 4 million in total of the annual budget for the women's game. Now, here's the thing. When you put in place things that should have been there all along, like sports psychologists, like proper trainers, add in wages, do all of those types of things, put in the resources to support those new roles that you're putting in place, a million doesn't go very far. And I understand there's a lot of cash strapped, you know, in the IRFU. But then again, when I'm looking at tickets going for the upcoming Scotland game at €140 a pop, I kind of raise an eyebrows at that, going, hang on a second here. Like, a million doesn't go a long way. And it certainly isn't going to address any of the issues, in my opinion, at club level, or in growing the game or supporting the game in that way.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a recognition that the pathway for young female players, like the way it is for male players, you know, with the robust schools, teams that, you know, like, you know, representative sides all the way up, that can, like, kind of identify players from a young age and get them to really good coaches, so they're ready-made when they become 18, 19, 20, 21, that they can kick on and play at a high level. That's not really there for the women. So I think there is a recognition in the report that that is something that needs to develop. As you say, when you're starting at such a low base and you have to maybe employ full-time people in some of these roles that would be a given ordinarily, that will eat into a chunk of that money, you would think.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. Like, they do have good people in place at the top. Like, Greg McWilliams is someone who has been involved in those pathways. Like, so he's a really good person, I think, to be the figurehead for this new generation, new era. But as you say, there's a long way to go, and a lot of it does come, you know, the club system at the moment. Like, you see the AIL, some of the results, you know, the top teams are beating the weaker teams by, over, you know, 100 points in some cases. So there's a myriad of issues even below the national team, which has gotten a lot of the headlines that you pointed to there. And that's probably as important as getting the full-time sports psychologist, as getting the full-time, you know, some of these people, because that's ultimately where the growth is going to come to get more players coming through.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, your player pool is everything that's involved in it. So, look, there's a long way to go in that. Let's hope, you know, it's not just talk, you know, to appease questions that are being asked. But there is another question being asked. Already a little bit of controversy around Greg McWilliams' appointment in selection. Cliona Maloney not included. Surprise to a lot of people, it has to be said, that she wasn't. Plenty of people saying that, you know, that might be some sort of a backlash to her being quite outspoken and tweeting about the issues within the women's game.
Yeah, it was definitely a surprise exclusion. You know, she's been playing she's been playing well by all accounts. It's a funny one. Like, Kevin Potts, the new CEO, was very strong yesterday when in the press conference said it was nothing to do with with a kind of a punishment or for speaking out. Ultimately, I suppose, until Greg McWilliams gives his press conference, it'll be very interesting to see what he says about that. Like, you'd like to think that it is just a Greg McWilliams' call. He wants to go in a different direction. I don't think Greg McWilliams would feel, maybe I'm just naive. Find it hard to believe that Greg McWilliams thinks that he has to, you know, do the IRFU's bidding or for some reason punish. Like, he's not going to cut off his nose, Kevin, by his face and drop like one of his top players unless he feels like he wants to go in a different direction. But I'm really interested to see what his take on it is. Kevin Potts said very strongly yesterday it was a form call by the coach. It had nothing to do with her comments. But it does seem a surprising time to drop her. But maybe Greg McWilliams is thinking a new era. He wants a clean slate, perhaps away from the noise of the last regime. And maybe he might feel that Cliona Maloney's comments is associated with that, and he wants a completely clean slate. So, I'll be very interested to see when Greg McWilliams does do a press conference what his explanation is for that.
Okay, yeah. No, obviously, there'll be all sorts of conspiracy theories around different things, and sometimes it can just be that a player doesn't fit into the game plan or the plans that a coach might have. And I've been the victim of that myself. So, I mean, you can understand that is the case. So, like, you know, let's wait and see what happens with it. But I know straight away it raised its head yesterday as, there you go now. Here's the backlash. It's starting already. Nothing has changed. They're not reporting. They're not releasing the report. And here we go. Someone who spoke out is getting dropped. And, you know, you can unfortunately, they've only themselves to blame for that narrative coming out because of the way that things have been handled. Yeah, so.
Yeah, no, for sure. As you mentioned there, you know, it's like, the second the report, and like, you know, it's funny when legal reasons are cited and you can't release a report, like, you know, what can we really say? You're kind of left with nothing really say because you don't know what the legal reasons are or what the reasons are. So it's kind of in some ways it's a good excuse for them to be able to put out, because you can't really be second guessed in any real depth unless you actually know the contents of the report. So you're kind of left, you know, clutching at straws in some ways. You just have to go off the recommendations, which is very frustrating. You'd love to know a little bit more about why exactly, you know, it was always going to be a confidential report. I don't really see on the face of it why releasing the report would necessarily identify various people, but that's what they're saying. So I suppose that's all we have at the moment.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll have to wait and see how that unfolds. I didn't get a chance to listen to your podcast yet, I must confess, but I'm sure there was plenty of conversation about the farce that was last weekend. I had the misfortune of being at it with my three sons, who to say it was one of the most boring experiences of our life is an understatement. What's going to happen? They're obviously going to change this stupid rule and try and make it a little bit more realistic. But for a team that are struggling the way that Italy are, having 13 players certainly doesn't help.
Yeah, well, there's a few things, I suppose. Like, you know, it was a red card, in my opinion. Like, it was a head-high tackle. So that's the first
point.
To be fair to the referee, like, for his first Six Nations game, I felt bad for him. We had handled an absolutely awful situation. But the rule is in place for, I suppose, a good reason on the face of it, that there was a period whereby, you know, there was maybe accusations, relegations of the teams. I think it originated in the Pro D2, potentially. We don't want to tie them all with the same brush, that maybe players were, you know, going down injured when maybe they weren't as injured as they seemed, and then it would go to uncontested scrums conveniently when you were getting minced in the scrum. But it's one of those things where you solve one problem and then you would willingly open another. Now, to be fair, this is the first time I've seen this happen in a game. I didn't know what was going on. I was like the Italian captain. I was pretty confused watching it myself. But yeah, you'd like to think there can be some wiggle room in the rule where, you know, there can be some sort of common sense applied where there's an injury like that and the guy clearly had a broken arm going off or a very, you know, and then there was a red card, that there could be some sort of leeway given or some sort of kind of sub clause in the rule. It's not easy to do, and the lawmakers are, you know, trying to you know, maybe cut down on the faking of the injuries. But yeah, it wasn't a good look.
No, but to be fair, Will, you know, when you say that they can bring something in, they absolutely can bring something in, because it was so obvious and evident that in that game that this was legitimate reasons. And if you think about it, now, as it happens, I did know the rules, and I was explaining to a few people around me in the stand who were completely baffled. Absolutely, everyone around was baffled about what was going on. You know, the fact that it hasn't come up to date, the fact that nobody knew it, and the fact that even the players didn't know the rules, just goes to show you how... you know, how few times it's raised its head. So it was unfortunate. So it can change it. You know, I don't think anyone would have been disappointed, for example, if the ref hadn't copped onto it on the day and had left Italy at full 14 players. I'd love to know if any eagle-eyed person would have brought it up afterwards and said, you know, technically they should have only had 13 players. I don't think there'd be too many.
No, exactly. Like, even Peter O'Mahony at the time, I think, was raising the question about whether... you know, a prop could have gone in at hooker.
Yeah.
It's one of my kind of pet peeves about rugby sometimes, is that, like, you know, I watch a lot of rugby. I know a lot of people who watch a lot of rugby. We were all scratching our heads when that moment happened. And, you know, if you're trying to get in casual fans or new supporters, like, watching that game on television, they would have been scratching their head thinking, what on earth is going on here? Like, what sort of rule? Because it's like double jeopardy. Like, you know, you get sent off, but you've lost another player. It's something that does annoy me sometimes, that the game can be a bit inaccessible to people who were kind of coming to it anew. And in this case, people who I know have watched, you know, hundreds, thousands of matches still didn't really know what was going on. So, yeah. Not a good situation.
Well, we didn't learn much about this Irish team. The question of Joey Carberry at 10 is still out, because you didn't get it. You can't measure it against that Italian side and the defence that you were up against. I suppose the bigger question may be, we've got England coming up, and we've got England who fell to pieces in the second half against a Welsh side that they should have had out the gate by another 40 points, in my opinion. But they allowed them back into it. In the end, it was quite nail-biting for England. So where do we stand? I mean, it's so hard to make this call about this game against England, being away from home. But I still fancy our chances. I really do still fancy our chances. But it will be with Johnny Sexton at 10.
Yeah, like I agree. On paper, I think it's really set up for an Ireland victory. Like, Ireland, you know, obviously really good November, you know, carried that style of playing, that form, into the Welsh game. The French game in the first half obviously didn't go to plan, but they battled back into it, could have won the game. Italy, as you say, okay, we're not even going to read into that. But ultimately, they're in a very strong place. They've almost a full deck to play from. The Andrew Porter injury obviously is a very bad one, and a very annoying time as well, because he's a key man. But England are not playing well, and Eddie Jones doesn't know his best team. When I look at this England team, I just don't know what to make of it. I don't think they're playing to their strengths anymore. He's kind of given in partly to the clamour for new blood, but it doesn't frighten me. It doesn't scare me. Like, but the big frontier for Ireland is going away from home and producing the sort of performance they've done routinely at home over the last while. That's the kind of the big test for me in my mind. If this was in the Aviva Stadium, I'd fancy Ireland strongly and to win, probably, you know, win well. But it's that away from home element, because I didn't think Ireland managed that well against France. Like, you know, it was a hostile environment. The first one they'd really played properly since before COVID, away from home. And I just thought they didn't play their usual game. They were quite sloppy at the breakdown. There was a lot of handling errors and kind of uncharacteristic mistakes that hadn't been made in the previous, you know, whatever, 7, 8, 9 match winning run. So that's why I'm so interested to see this test, because I think the Six Nations for Ireland, their campaign ultimately comes down to this game. If they lose their two big away games, it's kind of an opportunity missed to kind of, you know, put down the statement of intent ahead of the World Cup. I think they're more than good enough to win this. I think Sexton should start at 10. The Porter loss is big, but I don't like this England team at the moment. I don't think it makes sense to me when I look at it on paper.
Well, I agree. They just don't look coherent, and they also seem to run out of steam a little bit, which you never saw with English teams, but they do seem to run out of steam after 60 minutes. You'd maybe question their fitness somewhat. And the ironic thing now is, and given out about Wales, and we do this every week because, you know, you just don't know what you're getting with Wales, and they're a bit of a basket case at the moment, but we're now relying on, and we could be thanking, because I still don't put it beyond them, Wales, to beat France at home, because I don't see England going to Paris and doing it.
Yeah, I agree. I would give Wales an outside chance of winning that game. Yeah. Like, it's funny, even that Scotland game, like, and as good as France looked when they scored some of those unreal tries, it was 10-12 when Scotland butchered that absolute gift of a try scoring chance right on halftime where Hogg knocked it on after that long pass. If Scotland walked that try in as they should have, they're 17-12 up at the break instead of being 19-10 down. That game could well have gone differently. Yeah. And France gave Ireland a chance to win that game as well. So they're playing well and they're a form team, but they have given other teams a chance of victory. Wales on a Friday night in Cardiff, you know, and they have, we have to give them credit. They've rebounded really well from that Ireland defeat. Like, that was a catastrophic defeat. It was an embarrassing defeat. They went and they beat Scotland, and then they showed great fighting spirit against England as well.
They were down 17-0, I think, wasn't it, against England?
Like, no, you know, I know, but they could have easily folded there, and it could have been like the Ireland game.
I hear what you're saying, but I think you got to read into that how poor England, like, England fell apart then at 17-0, and just they couldn't even string two passes together, you know. I don't think Ireland would allow that to happen. I don't think France would allow that to happen. I don't even think Scotland would allow that to happen in the same way that they'd allow Wales back into that game. So, I hear what you're saying, but I can't read too much into that comeback when I'm looking at the opposition and the way they played.
Yeah, I take that to a point. I just think, you know, if Wales were the rabble I thought they were on week one,
yeah,
I would have expected them to lose that game by 30, 40 points. Yeah. Like, they're like the way they did against Ireland. And I've just been reasonably impressed, because when I look at their team sheet, I think it's very, very average, even compared to what it was 2 years ago. But even like getting someone like Toby Faletau or Talupe Faletau back, like, he's starting for Bath today with another game under his belt.
Yeah.
Like, he's a massive guy to have back in that team, even for the bit of experience he has.
Yeah.
And it's a Friday night in Cardiff. Like, if the roof is closed, it'll be a great atmosphere. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a close game, and if they could do Ireland a favour, it sets it up unbelievably for Twickenham, because it's worth remembering England are still in the hunt as well. Like, they're the same position as Ireland are at the moment, so it's set up to be an absolute belter. I would give Ireland the advantage at the moment, but there's something nervous I have about Ireland in these big away games. I just feel like I can't really trust them yet to go away from home and play the way they've been playing and put a team away, you know, a big team away. We'll see, I suppose. This is the big test.
GAA with Declan Drake on Dublin's Talking Sport.
Thank you, Reggie. Good morning and welcome to a regular look at the Dublin GAA scene here on Dublin's Talking Sport. Where do we start this morning? Well, I suppose St. Conlon's Park in Newbridge last Sunday. And Dublin's 1-12-12 point reversal at the hands of Kildare, which has the Blues staring down the barrel of relegation to Division 2 of the Alliance National Football League. One of the few bright spots on a grey, gloomy afternoon in Newbridge was the performance of Oliver Plunkett's own Rua man Sean Bugler, who kicked 4 points. Desi Farrell's Chargers now have 3 games remaining in the competition, 2 of them away to Ulster opposition, starting with the All-Ireland champions Tyrone in Omagh a week tomorrow. But if Kildare can beat Armagh the night before, then Dublin will be relegated. Well, after the game in Newbridge last Sunday, I spoke to Dublin manager Desi Farrell, and this is what he had to say.
You know, to be honest, I can't fault the commitment and the intensity. Obviously, Kildare have pep in the step. Newbridge, very difficult place to come. So we knew it was going to be a huge challenge. And I was happy actually with how we played. It was just the execution again let us down. It's been a bit of a trend in the last couple of games, and definitely something for us to work on. But, you know, we're expecting players back, which will be a big boost after those other options. And some of the younger players stood up well today. It's been fantastic. It's just not clicking for us. Hopefully that'll come. We're hoping to have a few players back in the next couple of weeks for sure, yeah. And as I said, you know, offers us different options. Well, look, we're just taking it game by game. You know, we can't look beyond that. We can't get hung up on outcomes or potential consequences. You know, it's about performance for us. As I mentioned at the start of the league, our ambition was to build ourselves to the extent that we'd be really, really competitive come summertime. Of course, you know, the league hasn't gone the way we would have hoped, but we have to stay focused on what the big picture might be, and that has to improve performance as we go, and we'll be looking to do that in the next game as well. you know, this is a great test of character for us all, of course, you know, and a huge opportunity to build resilience. And sometimes it's through adversity comes your greatest strength, you know, and it's been a baptism of fire for new players for sure, and a very different sort of environment for some of the senior players, you know. So it's all new, and all you can do is embrace it and run with it and navigate your way through it, and that's what we're about.
Today was tough coming down here, raucous Kildare crowd, but you can be sure in Healy Park in Alma, that'll be another hotbed up there. And again, the guys are just going to learn so much from an experience like.
We need to be converting some of these good performances to league points for sure. But again, the focus for us has to be on the performance, and take each performance game by game, and continue to learn and improvements, continue to take the learnings from previous games. And, you know, I think we've been doing that. We've been unfortunate with some of the senior personnel that have been out injured for a sustained period now. You know, when they come back into the mix, it also adds a sense of, as well as options and strength to the team selection. It just brings about an air of calm as well, you know, having some of those bigger players around too.
It's a huge day in ladies football as well. Park Tailteann in Navan hosts the meeting of All-Ireland champions Meath and National League champions Dublin in the final round of this year's regular group campaign in Division 1. Both these counties have already qualified for the last four of the competition with victories over Cork and Waterford. And of course, they may very well meet in the final again. They did meet last at Croke Park in September when Meath shocked the Blues to end their dream of five in a row TG Carr All-Ireland titles. So it'll be an interesting afternoon down there, to say the least. Well, recently I spoke to Dublin ladies selector Paul Casey of Lucan Sarsfields. We began by discussing the return of St Sylvester star Nicole Owens to the squad.
She was out of the squad last year, and Nicole brings a load of experience. She's had a great campaign with Sylvester's as well, so it's great to have her competing for a place in the team. And there's lots of players around there who are, you know, they make it difficult for girls to get back into that forward unit. But that's what we want. We want to try and create as much competition all over the pitch as possible. And it's important for the girls, when they do get a chance, that they put their hand up. Luckily now we do have that extra game in the league. So
finally, the next game in the league. It's no ordinary game, is it? Park Tailteann, Meath.
It's the third game that we had a focus on secured. But it's going to be good going up to Navan. We haven't played them in a national league, certainly for as long as I've been involved. So it would be good to go, and we know they're in good stead at the moment. And we face a big challenge now in Navan.
So that completes the football for this week. We're going to turn our attention now to hurling on the programme, and indeed Camogie as well. Our regular analyst, Sean Lane, is with us once again. Good evening, Sean. And by the way, I should say we are here in the home of Crumlin GAA on Thursday evening doing this particular piece. Nice to see you once again.
How are you, Declan? How's it going?
Sure, very well indeed. What a weekend for Camogie and hurling in the capital, Sean. We're going to start with Camogie and the fact that Dublin recorded their first victory in this year's Littlewoods National League Division 1. 1-12 to 2-point victors over Offaly in Moneygall. 13-point win there for the Blues. Aisling O'Neill of Castleknock with a goal and 5 to her credit. And considering what had happened against Galway the previous week, that's a tremendous way to get back on the bike and a great result.
Yeah, it definitely was, Declan. They were poor, and they'd know that themselves against Galway, but look, Galway are All-Ireland champions, so they're a young side, and we know, but they definitely did. As you mentioned, Aisling O'Neill got 1-5 and Aisling Marr got 5 points. It was a great result, but the next day against Tipperary will be the big step up. I think we mentioned it the last day, the three top teams in Camogie at the moment are Galway, Kilkenny and Cork. And there's a spot there for the fourth place. Tipperary are probably ahead of the rest, but Dublin's next outing is against Tipperary, and you know, the Dublin girls will have their work cut out to win that.
Wish them well in their endeavours indeed, but great to see them getting the result in Offaly last Saturday afternoon. It was a busy day last Saturday indeed, because Dublin Hurlers were in Allianz National Hurling League action as well in Division 1 Bain, and it took us to Tom Semple's field, Semple Stadium in Thurles. And what a night it was. 2-16 to 21 points, Dublin emerging victorious. The goals from Rian McBride and Ronan Hayes for the Blues. So to make it two wins and a draw in their first three games in this season's league campaign. Fantastic stuff indeed. Sean, you and I were in Thurles last Saturday evening. I certainly bounced out of the place with my head up and shoulders back after a result and performance like that. I'm sure that you were the same as well.
I was, Declan, definitely. And, you know, when you're beating the big teams like Tipperary's and Kilkenny and Cork are probably due a beat now as well by Dublin, it is great, particularly being a hurling man, that you can actually say to yourself, yeah, look, we're kind of in the top four, five or six now and on league form, and that may change with Championship and we may get better. But I was very, very happy man, along with my daughter coming out of Thurles. It was great.
One of the points you made last week looking ahead to the game was your concern about the defence, the fact that they conceded two goals against Waterford and the same against Antrim. They didn't do that against Tipperary last week, and some of the defending was very, very resolute, to say the least.
Yeah, and I remember, Declan, you asked me a question, should Matty change personnel or would he set them up differently? And I think we saw an absolute 100% Matty at his best, setting up the defence, inviting players on, left no space. Paddy Smith was absolutely outstanding, Keane O'Callaghan, Owen McDonald. Any ball, the first half in particular that went in, they just gobbled it up. But I'm not surprised with that. I mean, Coola won the two Club All-Irelands, and you know, Matty would have 12 or 13 lads defending when the game was tight and closing down space, but he'd also have the discipline. There'd be no silly frees given away. And I did mention this a couple of weeks back. When Dublin beat Galway last year in Croke Park in the Leinster Championship game, Dublin only conceded 114 in Croke Park, and that's very, very little. That was Matty at his best again. So that's one great thing that he seems to have got right now. Whether he has the right 15 or not, we don't know, but he certainly has 12 or 13 in him right, and I think he's five or six good ones there to make up his mind.
I don't know if you saw the piece on YouTube and Twitter and all the rest of it during the week, the clip of Danny Sutcliffe, the brilliant piece of skill. I mean, to see a Dublin player execute skill like that and really lift the crowd, and the Dublin crowd were magnificent down there last week as well.
Yeah, we fantastic crowd, Declan, which does lift a team, and it's great to see it now away from home as well, because we mentioned the Parnell Park Roar and we have a great record in Parnell Park, but to see the Dublin crowd down in Thurles was absolutely fantastic. And the wizardry you're talking about, he was absolutely fantastic, and to then end up getting a goal off the wizardry was absolutely fantastic. And I have to say, Rian McBride, when he got possession of the ball, he knew exactly where the posts were and he stuck it right in the bottom corner. Fantastic goal.
So, as you said, some outstanding performances all over the field. Aidan Mellott, Ballybolton, St Enda's was one such man in the forward division to stand out on the night. But who for you would have been in his company?
There's no doubt that Matty has to be. You know, you've mentioned Danny Sutcliffe, but Ronan Hayes and Donald Burke, just take the three of them. They're three of the best forwards that are around at the moment. Matty has to be 100% happy with them. Rian McBride is playing out of his skin, as is his Vincent's compatriot, Conor Burke, in the middle of the park. And at the back, I mean, you know, Paddy Smith the last day, his reading of the game and his distribution. Every time he got a ball in his hand, he never hit it long. He just covered 20, 30 yards, played it another 20 or 30 yards into someone who had space, which meant we got a good delivery into the forwards. So he has to be happy with a lot of those players. Young O'Callaghan in the cornerback, he was turned over once for a bad score. Other than that, thought he was excellent. And Owen O'Donnell, we said this time last year, Declan, and you and me, we didn't disagree on this, and we do disagree every now and again. But Owen O'Donnell this time last year was... you know, material for an all-star, and unfortunately we know that with injuries and all of that, but he's playing out of his skin again, which is great.
And our number one goalkeeper on the night did well as well in Sean Brennan.
Yeah, and to be fair, you're always getting stuck into me over that, but you'd have to stick with the goalie now. You know, he played the last day in Thurles against Tipperary, didn't concede a goal. Okay, the backs were excellent as well, but it's his job to stop anything going between the posts, and he did that fairly well and comprehensively. You know, you could argue Tip probably could have got a goal the last minute and stole the game, which I think would have been an injustice. I've two great friends, Matt Hayes and Matt Gleeson and Tom Hayes, two Tipperary men on the road, and they basically said to me afterwards, you know what, Dublin were by far the better team, 3 or 4 points, and it would have been an injustice if Tip got a score in the end. They nearly did, but maybe that's Dublin's year now, where the pieces of luck are going our way, like, rather than going against us.
let's keep our feet on the ground now at the same time as well. It was absolutely fantastic down there as well. But particularly I thought the way they held on, because Tipperary were, you know, the scoreboard was ticking over from their perspective in their bid to get back into the game to either draw it or win it. And maybe, you know, a couple of years ago, having been in that position, it's a result that might have gone against us.
Yeah, I agree with that, but there's a second side of that as well. I would have been very happy the fact that we held on, and there's no doubt we held on, and the backs held on, and well, Declan, is when you get the three or four possessions in the opponent's half, is to get a score. You can hold on that way as well.
And sorry, which were having a little difficulty in the first 10 or 15 minutes of the game.
To make, like, people think hanging on, it's you know, do or death on your own goal line. Hanging on can be getting 3 points over 15 minutes against the breeze, or making the right option of getting the ball and taking a fella on in the score zone and getting a handy free and getting 30 or 40 seconds off the clock as well. So there's lots of ways to hang on. And I know Matty draws an awful lot of players back when he does have to hang on. But still, if we have runners on the field at that stage and can run a back and get a free or get a score, I mean, the score that Ronan Hayes got the last day, Declan, where he got a ball, you know, out of the touchline, went round his man, and I thought it was a fantastic goal. So we really got two fantastic goals. But that's one thing we do have to, you know, when the game is the melting pot, as my dad used to say, you know, you need a ball winner. Danny Sutcliffe was excellent. Donald Burke was excellent. But, you know, you can't go 12 or 13 minutes without a score in this day and age in intercounty hurling.
Now, the next challenge up is another difficult one, but it's at home on Saturday stage to get them. Kilkenny, always a difficult challenge, but one that we can look forward to with great confidence considering the run that we're on at the moment.
There's no doubt, Declan. I'm looking forward to it again. I'm looking as forward to this game as I was to the Tipperary game. You know, the Ballyhale lads probably still won't be back. I know TJ Reid is on his holidays, so... or his honeymoon, I think, and Yvonne Cody and Adrian Mullen to come back in there. But Kilkenny, look, we've talked about this team, you know, the great Kilkenny team is gone, but they still, the current team has Owen Murphy in goal, the all-star goalie, the two lads from O'Loughlin Gales, you know, Hugh Lawler, Paddy Deegan, but they also have Páraic Walsh, who's a top-class player, and, you know, you've always pushed me on the all-stars. I mean, don't tell me Páraic Walsh wasn't better than the 7th or the 8th or the 9th Limerick hurler, because he is by far. So Kilkenny will be a really good side, and remember, that Kilkenny team, or this Kilkenny team, they only lost by a point to Tipperary, who was a free the very, very last puck of the game. So there'll be nothing in this game on Saturday evening.
Yeah, nothing indeed. We hope that you will all enjoy the occasion at Parnell Park. The advice would be to get there on Saturday evening. Get there early on Saturday evening as well to get the very best vantage point as well. So the burning question finally, Sean, is are we going to be this time next week talking about a third Dublin victory in this league campaign?
Well, when we were making predictions in the Walsh Cup, everybody was saying Ashford is only January. When we're making predictions in the National League, everybody's saying Ashford is only February. But we're into March now, and don't forget that the Championship starts in April. I think it's the 16th of April is the first Championship match. So Dublin have done everything right.
Thanks for listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken and Reggie. Have a good weekend.